sports world keeps on turning. That's why we bring you Saturday Sports Talk. Kick your weekend off with the week's top headlines in sports. Get in the game by calling 656-9900 or toll free at 1-866-656-9900. Star 99 is a free call for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. This is Saturday Sports Talk. Sports Talk on 99.1 The Sports Animal.
Saturday Sports Talk is here. Good Saturday morning. 99.1 FM, 990 AM online at 99.1thesportsanimal.com. The Sports Radio WNML app powered by Big Kahuna Wings, the wings that changed it all. I'm Joel Silverberg. Eric Kane back this week at the Budweiser Studios of Cumulus Broadcasting. Logan Ward, our producer. 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900. Star 990 is a pre-call for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. Eric Kane, good morning. Good to have you back. Good to see that you're well and healthy again.
Yeah, it's good to be back. XFL week two. Really getting fired up for that. So,
are you really? Have you picked a team?
Yeah, I picked the St. Louis Battlehawks because...
Just hopping on the bandwagon because, with Josh and I.
Are you guys Battlehawks fans as well?
Yeah, we declared this a long time ago, though.
Okay. Well, yeah, I declared it before week one, to be fair, because they have Marquette King as the punter. So I like that a lot.
So you chose your football team based on its punter.
Well, yeah, because he's awesome and he did a lot of things with the Raiders. And they have.
If by do a lot of things, you mean he punted for the Raiders?
Isn't Micah Abernathy on the? They have a VFL on the team. I forgot which one, but nonetheless, I chose the Battlehawks. So that big 15-9 win over Dallas week one really gets you pumped up.
Yeah, Dallas not having Landry Jones certainly helped.
Yes,
St. Louis as well.
But no. To answer your question, it's good to be back, feeling a lot better this week and ready to talk some Tennessee football and basketball.
And we'll get started kind of where we were a week ago. We had the discussion last week due to the article by Chad Simmons about his five signees to look out for in 2020 to make a big impact. The first one he listed was Tennessee quarterback signee Harrison Bailey, and Simmons had the idea that... Bailey could be the Vols starter by midseason. And so Jarrett Garantano with Tennessee football released a video last night talking about how Garantano had unfinished business, wanted to come back, wanted to take more of a leadership role, develop into a better leader, talked about how he wanted to see more consistency out of himself, said the last 2 years have been full of inconsistencies, and said the way that last season started, you know, the fact that they were able to finish on a 6-game win streak was really impressive. And then he concluded the video by saying that his ultimate goal was to take the team to the SEC championship game. So Garantano setting his sights on winning the SEC East in 2020, and that and a whole lot more coming up today. So talking Tennessee football, Tennessee basketball coming up against South Carolina tonight. Big game really for both teams. Tip-off is at 6 o'clock. At 5:30 is when coverage will begin with the Vol Network pregame coverage with the Tennessee Tip-Off Show. Bob Kessling, Burt Bertelkamp will be on the call live from Columbia. John Wilkerson handling all the studio updates for you on the Vol Network. And we will talk to Peter Burns, or you'll hear from Peter Burns of ESPN, the SEC Network. I had a chance to catch up with Peter yesterday, so he will discuss Tennessee football, Tennessee basketball, and then some comments that he had regarding Mel Tucker's move from Colorado to Michigan State to just what that means for the Pac-12, what it means for the college football playoff. A lot of topics that I had the chance to cover with Peter Burns, so you'll hear those in the 9 o'clock hour. And then, of course, we'll play Rip It at 9 o'clock as well. 656-9900, 1-866-656-9900 outside the local calling area. Star 990, a free call for AT&T and U.S. cellular customers. Tennessee's quarterback situation. I didn't have a chance to talk to you about this. Did you hear about this piece from Chad Simmons and his thoughts on Harrison Bailey, believing that it was very possible that Harrison Bailey could be Tennessee's starting quarterback by the middle of 2020?
Yeah, I heard about the article. I didn't read it, but I heard a lot of people discussing the article and just talking about the, you know, what Harrison Bailey can bring to a team and, you know, things that he possesses and, you know, one of the better quarterback prospects in the country, and about how it could be a realistic option for Tennessee to turn to him if things go south. Because, I mean, if Bailey was on the team this year, he would have most definitely played some quarterback for Tennessee, because it was at that point where, you know,
I mean, three other guys did.
Yeah, Maurer was hurt, Garantano was hurt slash bad, and JT Shroud was not trusted. So, yeah, I heard a lot of positive feedback from it.
The poll that we ran last week kind of got some mixed reviews, but we had some interesting comments on it. I thought it was a lot of fun to kind of discuss that with everybody involved and seeing how Tennessee could potentially go at the quarterback spot moving forward. I think it's Garantano's job to lose. I'd be very surprised if it was somebody other than Garantano. I think Brian Maurer is showing some potential, but still has a bit of a long way to go. And so the poll results that we had from last week, when will Harrison Bailey start for the Vols? About 180 votes. 16% said the season opener, 51% said midseason, 31% said 2021. So in other words, that Garantano would hold on to the starting job for the course of the year, which I thought was kind of interesting. But with the way that it has gone for Tennessee football the last several seasons, you are seeing multiple quarterbacks play for Tennessee. Now, in 2018, in Jeremy Pruitt's first year, you technically saw the same quarterback start all 12 games, but Garantano was knocked out of four of them. So there has been obviously plenty of opportunities for other quarterbacks to get onto the field in important situations, not just in garbage time. So for Garantano, consistency, wanting to take a step up, wanting to improve, wanting to make fewer mistakes, and wanting to get Tennessee back to the SEC East, I just thought it was interesting kind of releasing that video with spring practice coming up. The orange and white game is going to be here in about 2 months. So for Tennessee, you're looking ahead to 2020 with a ton of expectation, I think, with it being the third year of your head coach, seeing some improvement in year two, and then finishing the season on a 6-game win streak.
Yeah, I saw the video yesterday. And, you know, with Garantano, if you're an athlete, especially at the level of, you know, the SEC, National Football League, all that type of stuff, when you're in the spotlight, pretty much, you can't ever, you know, take what social media and, you know, what people say about you to heart, because you're always in the public eye. And so every mistake you do is under a magnifying glass on the football field, and you're going to get criticized for it. But Garantano, with the wrath that he got last season and a lot of the backlash from the fan base, he just looked like he was emotionally, physically just worn out towards the end of the season. And he turned his game around. He was even playing better. And so I just think that last season really took a toll on him. Not just, you know, physically, but mentally and emotionally and all that stuff too. And so I think he was really excited for that season to be over. And when I saw, you know, the video yesterday, I kind of thought to myself, I was like, well, it's kind of like he's, you know, turning the page, he's starting fresh, and he's, you know, trying to get a really good mindset about him. I'm not saying that he didn't have a good mindset, a good attitude or anything like that. I saw that, and I'm like, okay, this is a guy that's kind of looked refocused, kind of cleansed and ready to go, because the guy I saw after the bowl game, the guy that we interviewed and talked to after Vanderbilt and all those games, he just looked so just beat and just tired of it all. And so, but it was good to see. And of course, you know, that should be the goal every single time. If all things go as planned, Garantano starts every single game, and that means he's playing well and Tennessee's, you know, winning football games, and Harrison Bailey doesn't have to go in and get fed to the wolves. He can sit back, he can watch, he can learn, he can redshirt. You know, he could still play in four games. Some of those instances that you talk about, to where maybe if Garantano gets knocked out, or maybe if it's a blowout win, or, you know, whatever it may be, you know, Bailey can come in and get, you know, dip his toes a little bit. But that should be the goal for sure. And I agree with you. I think it's Garantano's job to lose simply on experience. I think he's the most talented quarterback on the roster right now. It's just about consistency. And that's something that all the quarterbacks on Tennessee's roster have failed to have the last couple of years.
I think, too, you're looking at just a higher level of expectation from everybody within the program, and that's something that's really been emphasized with Philip Fulmer and Jeremy Pruitt here in the last couple of weeks surrounding National Signing Day, and Tennessee getting DeMarcus Beckwith and Malachi Wideman and finishing with a top 10 class. Is the expectation with the fan base is obviously a lot higher, but Pruitt and Fulmer also acknowledging Tennessee needs to win more games. We need to do more as a program. Everybody within the program should have more expectations for the program. And it starts internally, and getting those expectations to climb to a higher level, I think, is really important when you're looking at trying to inch forward and closer to potentially competing for the SEC East.
Since I was out last week, I didn't get to ask you this. I wanted to ask you on air, and I know it was a good conversation. Both, you know, Pruitt said, you know, we were everybody was fired up about winning 8 games last year when it was all said and done. But no, that needs to be the floor. We need to keep climbing and all that stuff. And it was essentially a pep rally is what it was. It was a signing day celebration. There were boosters, there were fans and all that. And Philip Fulmer gets up there and says, top 10 signing class, the Vols are back. What did you think about that when he said that?
I think when he clarified,
you guys discussed on Sports 180
after that, that he, when he meant, was that the Vols are on their way to getting back. Yeah. They're working to get back. And I think that is probably more accurate to what he was wanting to say, because I think with Fulmer saying that the Vols are back and that we're going to take a bite out of everybody's backside, which is just such an odd way to say that. But anyway, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. Yeah. And it's not like he was at a press conference. I mean, he was at a signing day celebration.
Like,
and
from a representative of your organization, your team, like, I'm with you. Like, I don't care. Like, that's good. You're doing your job, essentially. Now, he did come back and clarify, because what he just said right there, I mean, it was like, okay, that's what I thought. But good for you. I mean, what you're supposed to get up there and say, well, we still, we're not that good right now, but we think we're getting better. No, you know, I thought
that's
it was
not
fine.
Exactly selling tickets to the football games on Saturday.
Exactly.
Afternoon.
You know, but for us sitting in this chair, and it's our job to sit there and evaluate and, you know, pick apart what people say and everything, I was kind of like, all right, not yet. There are some good things there. I mean, there are certainly things trending in the right direction. I think the program, you know, entering year three with Jeremy Pruitt, I think he's got it. I think he's got the culture set. I think he's got some good leaders. I think, you know, obviously 6-game win streak, all that stuff. There are a lot of good things happening, but not quite there yet. But again, he came back and clarified, as you pointed out. But I remember seeing that. I'm just like, okay, well, good for you. That's what is supposed to happen. But I was like, that's just, I mean, it got a lot of pub too around, you know, national talk sport, you know, sports talk shows and all that too.
I think with Fulmer especially it's his job right now to sell the program.
Yep.
And it's his job to, you know, and still hope in the fan base that Tennessee is moving in the right direction. And for the first time in the Jeremy Pruitt era, and I realized that there was the Auburn and Kentucky wins from 2018, but the way that season ended, it didn't exactly finish with the big exclamation point that you were hoping for. And I think at the end of the day in 2018, those Auburn and Kentucky wins ultimately didn't mean anything. They just didn't. And I don't think they meant anything to Jeremy Pruitt. I think they did at the time, but when you follow that up with, you know, blowout losses to Missouri at home and then Vanderbilt in the season finale with a chance to go to a bowl game, I don't think the wins over Auburn and Kentucky, I don't think they mean a whole lot. If that's what you're hanging your hat on after year one, because think about it, throughout year two, nobody was really talking about that anymore. And with the 6-game win streak, nobody's talking about Auburn and Kentucky from 2018, because I think everybody else realized those wins don't mean anything. And that's the thing, as big of a win it was, like, look at South Carolina's win over Georgia. What did that win mean to them? It essentially saved them from a 3-9 season. That's all that win did for them. And I think for any fan base, you know, throughout the course of the offseason last year, there was all this discussion about Auburn and Kentucky, Auburn and Kentucky, Auburn and Kentucky. And nobody wants to reflect on the Missouri and Vanderbilt games. And Missouri and Vanderbilt's where you left off. And it's kind of where Tennessee picked back up with Georgia State and BYU. But Tennessee turned it around in 2019, and that's what you're hanging your hat on now, is that you fixed it midseason and you closed out with a 6-game win streak. Now, you didn't beat Alabama, Florida, or Georgia, but that's the next step, is trying to compete with those teams. Now, ultimately, you have to do better than losing to all three of those teams by 20-plus points.
And to me, you know, beating Kentucky, beating Auburn on the road, and those two huge wins, because at the time, as you pointed out, yes, absolutely huge, but the way you finished off that season in embarrassing fashion with losses and blowout fashion like that, it doesn't mean anything. And so, to me, I equate that to where, yeah, you can win 7-8 games, but if you're getting blown out by your three rivals, how much progress are you making? We've had this conversation many, many times. So I kind of equate that situation to this as well. So I couldn't agree more. That's the next step. You've got to start. I mean, you were competitive in one of those games this year up until, you know, midway through the third quarter, and then boom, and it was over. You've got to be competitive. You got to start beating, you know, one of your three rivals right there. But those two wins virtually mean nothing at this point, because again, Tennessee still won 5 games that year, and Tennessee hasn't won a game that big since, in terms of knocking off a ranked opponent, you know, going on the road and beating a very good team like that. But again, you still did more things in year two than those wins in year one, you know, mean nowadays.
I think for Fulmer's case, him wanting to believe that the program is getting back, there's finally evidence of that now. And when you go out and turn your season around, you win six straight games, you get a top 10 recruiting class, those are the signs that your program is trending in the right direction. Now, Tennessee has a tougher non-conference opponent this year. I think the other three overall, it's not a bad non-conference schedule, but you're looking at Charlotte, Furman. You know, it's not, you've got three opponents that should be wins. And then you have Oklahoma. You have Oklahoma, Florida, Alabama, and Georgia. It'd be nice if you could steal one of those games.
Yeah.
But what's the fifth toughest game for Tennessee on that schedule? Is it at South Carolina? Is it at home against Kentucky? Those games are ones that you're going to have to show up and play well for if you want to win, but they're also ones that going into that game, Tennessee should be more talented. Tennessee should be expected to win, and you're not going to convince anybody that it's okay if Tennessee loses those games, considering Kentucky is Kentucky, and Tennessee fans are never going to be able to accept a loss to Kentucky, and then South Carolina coming off a 4-8 season. I think that if Tennessee finishes 7-5 again this year, it's going to be a serious disappointment for a lot of Tennessee fans.
No, I would agree. And I think the fifth toughest game would have to be at South Carolina. It's certainly not going to be at Arkansas. I mean, yeah, with Kentucky. Okay. It's either at South Carolina or Kentucky at home for sure. But yeah, another 7-win regular season. I don't think that's going to sit well with the fan base at all. And again, so like if everything goes according to plan, if it's chalk, Tennessee finishes, with four losses in the regular season, 8-4, but you've got to find a way to steal some of those games. And could it be next year? I mean, you know, I would like the chances of an Oklahoma, but not in week two. I would like the chances of a Georgia, but I'm afraid that Georgia team is going to get better and better as the season goes on. And by the time November hits, you know, how good could it be? So, you're supposed to lose four games this year on paper. You got to find a way to knock off one of those teams.
You get Florida at home this year. So I think there are a lot of fans that are excited about the prospects of potentially beating Florida and what that can mean for Tennessee. It's a rivalry that Florida has obviously dominated in recent history, and the last 2 years have not gone Tennessee's way. I think for, especially in the fashion that they have, but I think for Tennessee, that's the one that you look at and you think maybe you take advantage of something there. Now, Florida, again, another top 10 recruiting class, and Dan Mullen has won back-to-back double-digit win seasons
in
his first 2 years.
I picked Tennessee to beat Florida in 2018 here at Neyland Stadium. Florida was coming off a 4-win season. It was first-year head coach Dan Mullen. I wasn't sold on Felipe Franks at the time. Tennessee wasn't much better, don't get me wrong, but I picked Tennessee to win that game. Tennessee turned it over six times, twice inside its own, 20 in the first 7 minutes of the ball game.
And once inside Florida's own five through the back of the end zone.
Yeah, and so Tennessee didn't help itself out by any measure, but the balls got blown out at home, you know, by Florida. And so it's kind of been that, you know, really it's kind of been that type of a ball game for the last couple of years. Down in 2017, the heartbreaking loss, the way you lost that in Gainesville.
I know that this is a very, very, very difficult question to answer, but is that Florida game in 2018, is that like the worst Tennessee football game in the last decade?
In 2018?
Yeah. No. There are a lot to choose from.
You remember Tennessee almost knocked off Georgia and fumbled through the end zone.
Yeah, the thing is, it's just the fact that you had a sold-out Neyland Stadium.
The 98 team was there to celebrate its reunion.
The game, you have this awesome, epic hype video from Admiral Schofield.
Al Wilson spoke to the team before.
And the game is over within 15 minutes of real time.
Yeah. And a lot of those reasons is why I picked Tennessee to pull off an upset. I was like, okay, you're playing at home. You have all these things. You know, football's so mental, too. I'm telling you, football, a lot of things are mental. Let's be real. Football is so mental. And I was like, man, you got a lot of these things going for you. If you can get jacked up and ready to run through that tunnel, that tee, and just get some things going early on, maybe that can carry you. And then you're right. I mean, Florida just comes in there and it just waxes them. And so, I mean, that was a bad loss. That was a really bad loss. And Tyler and I both, it was the first quarter of the time. We picked Tennessee to win that game. And then after the game, we did the game recap and we felt like fools. But did not pick Tennessee to go to Gainesville this year and win at all. But these games have not been competitive the last 2 years. And then, you know, Florida and Tennessee both were bad in 2017. And it is what it was. And Tennessee got the win in 2016. And there were some close ones earlier on in this decade, but here lately, it's been one-sided. So it can't be one-sided. You can't get blown out by 30 to your top rival in the East. You just can't do that if you're on the way back. And, you know, that's where we, again, this conversation always comes around to, yeah, 7 wins are good, 8 wins are good, you know, potentially 9 wins with a bowl game is good, but how much ground are you really making up? How much better are you really getting if you're still getting just waxed by Georgia, Florida, and Alabama every year? Because to me, you're not getting much better.
Yeah, and I think that was the point that Booger McFarland tried to make in 2017 when he thought Tennessee was going to be abysmal. It wasn't a matter of just the response to that was Tennessee really should be 8-4, should be 8-4 again, which was going to annoy a lot of fans, but you figure Florida, Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee doesn't really have the strength to compete with those teams with all the seniors they lost. Then you figure you're going to lose to LSU. What nobody accounted for was that Tennessee was also going to lose to Vanderbilt, Missouri, Kentucky, South Carolina. So yeah. I think for a lot of what happened that season and for a lot of fans going into this year was if you go 8-4, okay, the wins are increasing, but you can't lose all 4 of those games by 3 scores or more.
Mm-hmm.
And while I think fans felt pretty good about parts of what happened during the Georgia and Alabama games in 2019, at the end of the day, you lost to Alabama by 3 touchdowns.
Yep.
You failed to cover a 25.5-point spread at home. There's only so many positives that can be taken away from that. And I think for Tennessee, it's about being able to compete at a high level and being able to maintain it. Because sure, you can take what happened in the first half against Georgia and say, yeah, Tennessee's competing at a high level. Okay, but then the third quarter happened.
You can see what it could be. You know, if you put it all together and you have the durability to go 4 quarters, because that first half, there, you know, Maurer made some really good throws. The defense played with aggression. There are a lot of things in that first half that you like, but again, it's a 4-quarter football game, and then that was not the same team that started the game, that finished the game, and Tennessee, again, got blown out by, you know, 26 or whatever it was.
Yeah, and I think, you know, no fan base likes to do this with their own team, but you have to play it both ways. If you're going to say, well, if we had played the way in the second half that we did in the first half against Georgia, we would have won. If Kentucky had played the way in the second half and played in the first half against Tennessee, what do you think would have happened?
And if Tua would have played against Alabama, boy, it would have been a shootout from the get-go.
And by shootout, you mean one team would be doing all the shooting?
Yeah. Yes. Tennessee would be firing blanks.
Yeah. I don't think Tua's throwing 5 red zone interceptions to Nigel Warrior.
Yeah, that might have been one of his worst plays of the season. Good play for Nigel. You seem to just get hot. Was it Judy? Judy that hawked him down.
It was either Judy or Ruggs.
It was Ruggs. I think it was Ruggs. Yeah. It just shows you the difference. And but anyway, you've got to start taking those steps. And if you're really coming back, if you're really wanting to get the program back to where it needs to be, being a top 10 team nationally, not just in recruiting rankings, and being a top tier SEC team, I think, you know, per Rivals, Tennessee finished 7th and 5th, 7th in the nation, 5th in the SEC, 24-7, yep. Tennessee finished 10th and 8th. So you're still, you know, they're still, you're getting up there, but, you know, all the other SEC teams are as well. So you've got to find a way to break through that and to solidify yourself as a contender, not a pretender, and not only your conference, but your division of the SEC.
656-9900, 1-866-656-9900, outside the local calling area, *990, a free call for AT&T. And U.S. Cellular customers. With Eric Kane, I'm Joel Silverberg. Logan Ward, our producer this morning from the Budweiser studios of Cumulus Broadcasting. Speaking of that Alabama game last year, everybody remembers the penalty called on Daryl Taylor for supposedly pushing Mac Jones into the dirt. We had an opportunity to talk to him on Sports 180 earlier this week. He spoke about that penalty in that Alabama game. Hear what he had to say on the other side coming up next, right here on Saturday Sports Talk FM 99.1, the Sports Animal. *656-9900 if you want to join us. *990 is a free call for AT&T and U.S. Cellular customers. So that Tennessee-Alabama game, a lot of fans obviously frustrated about many things that happened.
Yeah, there's a lot of things you can look back and say, oh, you know, the Garantano goes rogue, the two-finger face mask tug, the phantom face mask in the dirt by Daryl. I mean, there are a number of things.
The sudden stoppage in play as Tennessee was getting ready to line up in the Wildcat.
The Nigel Warrior interception of Tua there. you know, in the first quarter.
Well, that didn't make Tennessee fans frustrated. That made Tennessee fans happy.
I know, but there were a lot of noteworthy things from that game where it's like, boom, 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 to your point.
And the one that you mentioned, Daryl Taylor being flagged on a roughing the passer penalty that would have stopped an Alabama drive. Instead, Tide got an extra 15 yards, ended up driving the length of the field and scoring. We talked to Daryl Taylor on Sports 180 with Josh and Heather. He joined the show as he's getting prepared to look ahead to the 2020 NFL draft. And he was asked about what he thought about that penalty that he was flagged for.
You know, I didn't think too much of it. It was just some, I think it was a bad call, but, you know, I just lived with it, decision the ref made. But, yeah, I don't think it was a really good call. And I think it turned the table for us, put us in a bad position. And that's not definitely what I wasn't trying to do for my team. I was just trying to make the tackle, and I couldn't see what was going on. So I thought they had caught the pass, and I was just laying there. And that's when I heard the crowd go, like that he dropped the pass. So I was like, okay, and I got up, and they made it seem like I pushed him in the ground. I think if I really wanted to push him in the ground, I think his face mask would have had a little dirt in it, but it didn't. So I don't think I really pushed him in the ground, but the ref made a decision to make that call, and I just lived with it.
If I had really pushed him into the ground, I would have thought his face mask would have had a little more dirt on it.
I just get mad all over again because, and again, I do not, you know, when you cover a team, you're unbiased. You don't have a rooting interest. But when you see stuff like that happen in college football now in 2020, as a former football player, that infuriates me. I mean, when you're playing football, especially on defense, and a lot of times, you know, that you're rushing that quarterback, he throws the football. And I mean, you're going to hit him no matter what, you know, back in my day. And then nowadays, I mean, it's a flag, you know, regardless. You can't touch the quarterback. That was that play that Daryl Taylor just talked about. I mean, he said, obviously, I thought it was a bad call. Of course it was. I mean, that was literally nothing. And that's a penalty in 2020. And that's so infuriating. I'm getting mad all over you just thinking about it.
And I tweeted this at the time, I guess, after the touchdown was scored several plays later. And I still stand by this. It was a bad call. The officials were awful in the Alabama game.
Yeah.
Alabama still had to go, what was it, like another 55 yards, mm-hmm. something like that, mm-hmm. after that penalty?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Defense still could have gotten a stop. Let's not act like it handed Alabama 6 points.
That one penalty was not the reason Tennessee lost the football game.
Yes. Did it give Alabama an extra opportunity? Were they able to take advantage of it? Yes. As a defense, I realize that a lot of fans like to play the momentum game. As a defense, your job is to go out there and get a stop. So complain about the penalty all you want to, still had a chance to go out and make a stop after that.
If you remember, there was a point in time, there were two drives, I believe, late in that second quarter. So Daniel Batuli came into the game, suspended for the first half because of targeting the week before.
Yes.
So you had Henry Tuotuo and Kolveris Crouch starting that football game.
And I believe, was that the game where Tuotuo
got knocked for targeting in the first half of that game in the second quarter, and so he had to go sit. Yeah. So for a drive or two, you had, I don't know where Kolveris Crouch was, excuse me, but for a drive or two, you had J.J. Peterson and Sullen Page inside playing as your inside linebackers. That's how critical depth was at the inside linebacker position this year at points in time. There's a lot of things from that Alabama game that you can point back, but certainly the one that, you know, fans will go back and remember the most is that penalty on Daryl Taylor. Because, again, it was a huge momentum swing. That would have been a big stop for Tennessee. And, I mean, flat out, he didn't do it. He didn't do it at all. But you're right. Alabama continued to march down the field, convert multiple third downs in that drive, and then score a touchdown. So Tennessee's got to find a way to rally and come back from that horrendous swing of momentum, and it didn't.
Yeah, just obviously a frustrating situation, a frustrating game for Tennessee fans because it felt like it competed. And at the end of the day, Tennessee only scored one touchdown, kicked a couple of field goals, lost the game by 22.
I think Tennessee ran the ball okay. I mean, overall, I think it ended with about 115 rushing yards. Jordan ran for about 93. That's not great. I mean, that's a good individual effort from Tim Jordan. Overall, that's not great. But that was one of, surprisingly, that was one of the better running games Tennessee had this year outside of the BYU and the Vanderbilt contest. That was one of the better running games Tennessee had all year. So there were some things that you liked. I thought Brian Maurer came in and made a couple nice throws early on before he got knocked out. But again, I mean, when it came down to it, you just saw the difference in the two programs. But again, that was one of those games this year where you said, man, Tennessee competed. You're seeing how much this team's grown, but again, it's about putting it together.
And in actuality, it should have potentially been a one-score game midway through the fourth quarter. That's the one thing that you could point to and say, yes. Now, does that mean Tennessee would have gotten a stop, you know, gone down the field and won the football game? No. No, it doesn't. Especially when at that point in time, okay, you've just gotten your second touchdown in the fourth quarter of the game in the fourth quarter. There's no guarantee, A, that you're getting a stop. There's no guarantee that you're driving down the field and scoring a touchdown.
Mm-hmm.
So could you have made the argument that, hey, we could have at least said that we had it at a one-score game? Because it was 28-13 at the time of the fumble, and you're likely kicking the extra point to make it 28-20. It's a one-score game midway through the fourth. But in all reality, I think you're realistically talking about, okay, Alabama finds a way to either get stops or run out the clock or drive down the field and kick a field goal and make it a two-possession game again. It's not as if Tennessee competed. Tennessee did compete for good portions of the game. There's very little to indicate that Tennessee was the better football team. It's just the way it is. And we're talking about Alabama as if it had this horrendous season. It took Tua making a bunch of really uncharacteristic mistakes and one of an incredibly dominant team in LSU.
It took Auburn. It took a backup quarterback throwing two pick sixes and a special teams touchdown for Auburn to beat Alabama by what, three?
Yeah, and a 30-yard field goal off the post.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong. I mean, if and I said this earlier, I think if Alabama and Auburn played again, Alabama would have won. I mean, it was that close. And so Alabama,
didn't one of those pick sixes come in the red zone too? Wasn't Alabama about to score a touchdown?
I think so. I think you're right. Alabama was not a bad football team this year. So you just think because it wasn't competing for a college football playoff national championship that it was a bad football team. And it simply, no, it wasn't.
It's still ranked in like the top 20 in the SP Plus defensive efficiency rankings, too. It took a step back historically from some of the defenses we've seen, but it's not like it was a bad defense. And if Alabama doesn't hand LSU 20 free points in the first half, Alabama probably wins the football game.
Yep.
So there's nothing.
That was Tua's first game back too, right?
Yes. Yeah. They had the bye week after he was dealing with the injury. They had the bye week and he was going to give it a go.
And he, against Alabama, he or against LSU. He threw for over 400 yards in that contest, but they're playing from behind, you know,
but the fumble and the interception right before the first half just killed Alabama. And I think Alabama was trying to press at the end of the second quarter, feeling like, okay, we're down by two scores. LSU's going to get the ball back. You know, and Alabama, credit to the Tide, they made that a one-possession game several times in the second half and just couldn't get over the hump. And just when you think they're down and out, they get this long touchdown pass down the sideline, and they managed to get Joe Burrow to a couple of third downs, just couldn't make plays. So, but that's what it took. It took LSU having a 20-point halftime cushion to beat Alabama by four. It took Auburn getting a ton of breaks to win that game by three in the Iron Bowl. It's not like Alabama was an easy out.
No, it wasn't.
So it's, and again, credit to Tennessee for competing. I think that showed a sign of things to come, what it did against Georgia, what it did against Alabama, and then continue to compete at a high level. And before you know it, you go from 2-5 to 8-5. Tennessee has a lot to look forward to, but it has to show more. Competing for stretches on the field is not going to be enough. If the Tennessee-Alabama game plays out the exact same way, maybe minus some of the chaos, but if it's close through the first half and Tennessee still loses by three touchdowns, that's not improvement.
No,
it just isn't. It's not the progression that you're looking for. You need to be able to start competing against at least one of those teams, preferably multiple, but you can't go out, lose to Florida by 31, you know, lose by 29 to Georgia, lose by 22 to Alabama, and say that your program is showing progress just because you managed to beat Kentucky, Mississippi State, South Carolina, Missouri, and Vanderbilt.
Yeah, absolutely not. Absolutely not. And a lot of times I feel like I keep putting the keep putting it down and not pointing out the positive, because there are a lot of positive. Hey, listen, what Tennessee did this year, I know the competition wasn't great. I know you weren't going on the to the plains and beating a ranked Auburn team. I know you weren't beating the best Kentucky football team in the history of the school. But from where you were at, you know, 2 wins, 2-4, with the losses to BYU, with the loss to Georgia State, with the way the quarterback position was in flux, where you were to rebound and just win, and, you know, win, 6 consecutive wins, play yourself into a bowl, win a bowl. The way you, the bowl game against Indiana was the perfect snapshot of the 2019 season. I mean, struggles in the red zone. Tennessee was the better team, just weren't, you just weren't winning football games. Garantano was playing so inconsistent. And then with the snap of the fingers, you turn around, you get a break, you get a nice throw, you get a nice run, you're right back in this football game, and you win this game. I mean, it was the perfect snapshot. So what Tennessee accomplished this year was really incredible, because for any team to do that, I mean, that just got to show that team had a great backbone, good leadership in the locker room. That team bought into what the coaches were teaching and preaching, and the team was mentally strong. And what it was, I mean, Garantano, despite all the ups and downs, roller coaster and everything, and I even made the comment earlier, like, he looked beat a lot of times this season, but the mental toughness for him to stay in and adapt to a new role and to come in and his teammates not to give up on him. Point being said, what Tennessee did this year, this in the 2019 football season, was very impressive. But again, if you want to be, if you want to talk that talk like this fan base wants to, and again, there's nothing wrong with it, you know, but if you want to talk that talk on the field, you've got to start beating the Georgias, the Alabamas, the Floridas, being competitive, because again, we both of us keep hammering that point across. Until you're competitive, until you're winning those football games, you're not significantly taking that step, and you're a pretender in this SEC, essentially.
Well, and there's two types of expectations, because every program has expectations. And the two types of expectations are, you're either coming off a more positive season where you have expectations because it is genuinely believed that your program is improving and moving in the right direction and you are doing good things, or you're failing to meet expectations and you need to make a big jump in a big way somehow, and the odds are kind of stacked against you. For Tennessee, it's the first one, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
And that's why there's this expectation, for us at least, that it needs to be, you know, you need to be more competitive against the bigger schools. It's not going to be enough to just sweep everybody else again. And maybe you can get away with 8-4. 8-4 is not the end of the world, but how do you do in those 4 losses? That's the big thing. So I think the fact that there are expectations as a result of having a good 2019 is a good thing. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. So if it sounds like we're being overly critical, it's more just saying, Tennessee fans, it's acknowledging Tennessee fans, they're not going to be happy constantly losing to Florida and Georgia every year.
No.
And Butch Jones was sweeping Missouri, Vanderbilt, Kentucky. I mean, mm-hmm. He was beating those teams, but fans were getting sick and tired of him not beating Florida, Alabama, and Georgia. Then he finally beats Florida and Georgia.
Then you lose to South Carolina and Vanderbilt.
So, but the expectations surround those teams. Fans want to start seeing those teams be in competitive games with Tennessee again. So I think that's where the expectation comes from. It's simply a matter of Tennessee has expectations because it's having success. And that's really good. And that's really important. And Jeremy Pruitt's proving it on the field and on the recruiting trail. Now it just needs to translate to year three again. 656-9900. We'll come back, wrap up hour number one of today's edition of Saturday Sports Talk next with Eric Kane. I'm Joel Silverberg. This is Saturday Sports Talk on FM 99.1, the sports animal. Final segment to hour number one of Saturday Sports Talk. Tennessee basketball coming up tonight at 6:00. Pregame coverage on the Vol Network starts at 5:30 right here on the Sports Animal. You can hear John Wilkerson on the Tennessee Tip-Off Show. Bob Kessling, Burt Bertelkamp will be on the call.
And Tennessee, a 3.5-point dog. Home dog.
Road dog, you mean?
Road dog.
Yeah, games being played in Columbia.
Yeah, road dog. Tennessee's an underdog.
Last time these two teams played, Tennessee won the game by one. It was not a pretty basketball game. It was essentially a free throw shooting contest for the last 12 minutes.
56-55 final. Yeah, it was cool.
John Fulkerson with the game-saving charge on A.J. Lawson.
Yes.
Rick Barnes acknowledged after the game, if Fulkerson doesn't take the charge, Lawson dunks the ball, and they probably win. So Fulkerson, I believe, had 15-10 that game. Monster game for him. South Carolina, since that loss to Tennessee back in January, has won 7 of its last 9. The losses coming on the road to Auburn and Ole Miss. That Ole Miss loss isn't great.
But the Auburn is expected.
Losing on the road at Auburn is expected. Kentucky lost on the road at Auburn. Since then, South Carolina has also beaten Kentucky. They have a win over Arkansas.
South Carolina beat a top 10 Virginia team way earlier this year. Now,
back in the non-conference
Virginia
schedule.
Has fallen since, but, you know.
Yeah, still a team that's likely to make the tournament, though, in Virginia and the defending national champions.
Yeah, and this South Carolina.
Also won it at Virginia.
Yeah, they did. This South Carolina team's playing good right now, playing hot. This is one of those teams to where, at this point in time, you know, Rick Barnes is preaching how it's so hard to win games in January and February because this is where the separation begins when you're trying to solidify your seeding for conference tournament action and all this stuff. And this is about the best time you could be playing at your best, and that's what South Carolina is doing right now. Again, you mentioned 7 of 9. You know, the contributions is getting up and down the lineup. Rick Barnes even said this is a team right now that's playing in different ways. When you think of South Carolina, you think it's a team that can really play slow, you know, slow the tempo, play the half court, grind things out, which it can. But this team is also playing very fast. They you have to guard them in transition. They do a nice job of working the elbow and then attacking the lane to the blocks. And so South Carolina is really just clicking on all cylinders right now.
South Carolina, 73 in KenPom and
65th in the net
rankings. Yeah. And you talked about playing it slow and maybe that can be the case for teams that struggle offensively. South Carolina ranks 25th in the nation in adjusted tempo. They're one of the fastest teams in college basketball in terms of how much pace they like to play with. And they like to go. And they have had contributions from a number of players. A.J. Lawson, Mike Kotsar are the guys that you're going to hear the most. A.J. Lawson's been their leading scorer. Mike Kotsar is their older veteran who's been experienced, has a nice jump shot that he can hit off the baseline, can get inside, draw fouls. Jair Bolden has been a guy for them that at times, mostly he's been coming off the bench, but when he goes off, South Carolina is usually doing a lot of good things. Keyshawn Bryant has been doing some good things for them as well. So they've got players that can go out and help them win games, but it's, I think we stopped talking about South Carolina. You know, they're 15-9. It's a game better than Tennessee. Tennessee's sitting at 14-10. And there's been all this discussion about Tennessee. You know, they've got all these quad one opportunities. And that's just not being talked about here in Knoxville, but that was being talked about during the Arkansas game earlier this week about how Tennessee had all these quadrant one opportunities and so many quality opponents left on their schedule that if they could get a run going, then they could climb back into the bubble conversation. With South Carolina, they also play in the SEC, but we stopped talking about South Carolina because they lost to Boston University in Stetson. And I think, and you'll hear Peter Burns' comments on this from the SEC Network coming up in the 9 o'clock hour. But if we're not, you know, if South Carolina finds a way to just correct those two losses, we're talking about a team that's 17-7 with wins over Kentucky, Arkansas, and Virginia on the road. And we're probably talking about a team that's headed to the NCAA tournament. And right now we're not even discussing that with South Carolina. So the only reason I bring that up is not to say that, oh, South Carolina is really this good team, but it's a team that's playing better, and it's a team that also has a lot to play for. Their season's not over by any stretch of the imagination. You're talking about Tennessee getting back into the bubble conversation. There is bubble positioning, bubble rights to be had with this game in Columbia tonight.
Yeah, and, you know, again, positioning itself for the SEC tournament, currently tied for 4th in the SEC with Florida right now is South Carolina. Of course, you have Auburn, Kentucky, LSU. Then yeah, the Gators and the Gamecocks. So this is a big game. You know, every game is big down the stretch. Don't get me wrong, but I mean, this is a team that, again, there's a lot of opportunities in front of it, just like there is for Tennessee. It gets really jumbled through the middle part of that stretch, kind of where the Gators, Gamecocks, you know, Bulldogs, Mississippi State, Tennessee, and of course, then you get the Crimson Tide and all that. But yeah, I mean, it's a big one. This is a big one for both teams, and so I expect a South Carolina team to really, you know, continue to press it on. It's scoring 71 points per game, playing very good defensively as well, only giving up 66. That's where Tennessee compares to it as well, to that squad. So I expect South Carolina to come out and play fast, and I think Tennessee is going to have to, as Rick Barnes said, defend in transition, get out to a hot start. And, you know, this will be interesting too. Where do you think Pond, Where do you think Pons is going to play today? At least start out. The wing or play back inside four? Where do you see that starting lineup for Rick Barnes being today?
Depends on the availability of Josiah Jordan James.
Say he's out.
And yesterday he was listed as day-to-day, by the way. If he's out, I would expect Pons to probably be starting at the four.
Yeah.
Because I think Barnes liked what he saw with Jalen Johnson going out and trying to play instead of starting Juroš Plavšić. Now, it was reported after practice on Thursday that now Jalen Johnson is apparently a little under the weather. So I guess it was John Fulkerson and Eve Pons that were playing with flu-like symptoms.
Rick Barnes said Thursday that Fulkerson's feeling better, Pons is feeling better, Jalen Johnson today said he's not feeling as great.
Yeah.
And so that's
so now they're just passing it around. So yeah, expected. Fulkerson, Pons, I would expect Bowden and Vescovi to be out there. And then probably Jalen Johnson, assuming that he can go if Josiah Jordan James can't. So I would expect that you'll still see Pons starting inside and then working him out to whoever needs it.
Want to make a quick note before I forget it. Mentioned Tennessee is a 3.5 road dog today. And from our friend Tyler Wyatt, Vols are 8-10 since 2016 as a road underdog. 44.4% win percentage in the span is the highest in the SEC since 2016. So though it's under 500, 8-10.
Yeah, now those last two seasons have certainly
It's benefited the Balls.
Those numbers, certainly. Yeah.
Because I started thinking, I was like, well, yeah, the Tennessee was not losing a whole lot of games the last 2 years, so that's why that percentage is up there. Rick Barnes also said he was asked about Juroš Plavšić, and simply put, his minutes have diminished. And how does he fix that? And he said he's got to come in and play with a purpose. He's got to be productive. Right now, the game is so much more mental than physical for Juroš Plavšić, and he has all the ability in the world. And the question was asked, were you surprised that he came out and scored 16 against Mississippi State, and then he's been, not as good since? He said, no, he's a freshman. He's learning, how to deal with all this stuff. He's still learning what we want him to do, and unless we tell him to go in and foul, he's just really not playing with a purpose right now. And so that's kind of the thoughts on Juroš Plavšić. He said he's got to go in and win it again in practice. He said Devontae Gaines and Olivier Kumwa have earned it back in practice, and Plavšić has to do that.
Yeah, and I thought Kumwa did some really good things against Arkansas earlier this week. Now,
as a Devontae Gaines,
you get away with playing that smaller lineup when Arkansas is the worst rebounding team in the SEC. South Carolina is right there in the middle of the pack at 7. So might need a little bit more size out on the court a little bit more often, because you don't have those smaller but quicker bigs, guys like Admiral Schofield, that can go in and fight for rebounds the same way. Now, you have an Eve Pons, but he can't do it all for you. If you want him guarding out on the perimeter, you can't expect him to just get board after board after board. No. He's not going to give you 14 and 14 if you need him covering at the guard spot. So I think for Tennessee, it's figuring out what is the best lineup that's going to get you, enough of a battle on the boards. Can you shoot efficiently from the field? Because that's been a big difference for Tennessee in its last two games especially. And can you find a way to contain A.J. Lawson? Might be another rock fight, but Tennessee's got to go on the road and win. This is a game that both teams need. Both of them, quite frankly. Be interesting to see what would happen with the bubble conversation if either side could pull it out, considering that Alabama and Mississippi State, the SEC's two bubble teams from last week, have now taken losses, are on bit of skids, and suddenly they're off the bubble conversation for right now. We'll come back with Rip It on the other side. Hour number two of Saturday Sports Talk is next. 656-9900 if you want to join us. With Eric Kane, I'm Joel Silverberg. It's Saturday Sports Talk on FM 99.1, the Sports Animal.